thank you for coming back to Be Fair, a podcast hosted by Aaron. That's me. And this is a very special episode with a very special topic with a special guest. Aaron McKinney joins me, and we share memories of her brother Liam, who I was close friends with for a couple years back in the early 2000s when I first moved out of Grand Rapids, along with Liam. We both ended up in the Duluth Superior area, and he ended up taking his own life to suicide, obviously. And it was my first impact with losing someone to that. And meeting Aaron and sharing these stories on this podcast was very special, and it's very important. It's a very important topic to discuss, to try and end the stigma. So please do enjoy the episode for what it is and appreciate what we are able to share in this. And thank you again for listening. Don't forget that if you or anyone else is struggling with thoughts of suicide, please do remember that help is available from the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. Hello, and welcome back to Be Fair, a podcast hosted by Aaron, and that's me. And of course, today is a special episode. I am joined by the lovely Aaron McKinney. How are you, Aaron?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really good. I have to just talk about how we met, I want to say maybe 6 months ago. I feel like it was during the pandemic, and I know you came in with Katie, or you came in with Tia.
I came in with Katie shortly thereafter.
Yes. And so I was working at Boulder, and you guys came in after working a shift at Unwind, because that's where you work. We'll talk a little bit about Unwind for our listeners that are local, I think it's an amazing thing, because I never realize that your 30s is an important time to establish that you are a wine person.
You're limited by your 30s.
Not just your 30s, but in my case, I didn't really like wine until my 30s. Like, there was something about it. I was like, nah, it was too dry or too tart or whatever. So, and now it's like, I can't get enough. Like, give me all the wines.
Well, you know, that's the fun thing about Unwind, is that when you go to somebody's house and try wine, you're trying one, maybe they have two or three bottles open, but it's not usually a large number of choices.
Yeah.
And it's easy to go, ooh, I just don't like wine. But Unwind has over 40 Minnesota wines. Mm-hmm. And so there's something for about it. But.
And some delicious food to boot.
Oh my goodness.
I had a sandwich there. I think it was like a chicken bacon ranch type of sandwich. Does that sound familiar?
That sounds like an off menu special, but we do those quite frequently. We do that.
No, this one's on the menu because it had one of the fun names.
Oh, a pizza. It wasn't a sandwich.
This one was a sandwich, but it wasn't chicken bacon ranch then, but it felt like it was something with chicken and bacon. Well, I'll think about it. But yeah, it was real. It was really good.
Yeah, the Chris Pratt flatbread pizza, and that's like a chicken bacon ranch. But
well, now I know I have to try that too.
Oh, right.
But yeah, so that was how we met, and like you and I just instantly clicked, and we're like, oh, this is so much fun. And it was a couple months ago that I saw, I don't remember, somebody shared a picture of your brother Liam on your Facebook. And all of a sudden I was like, I saw his face, and I was like, oh my God, Liam. And then I put your last names together. I was like, oh my God, they're siblings. And so for listeners to know is that I knew Liam, it would have been mostly from 2004 to about 2007 is when we were closest. And I moved down to Duluth and Superior in about right at the end of 2004, and about a week or so after I moved, he decided he wanted to move there. So he came and stayed with me for a few weeks
Oh my
and
gosh,
stuff.
where he was living here in Rapids.
And then he moved to,
I'm loving that I haven't heard this story yet.
well, that's kind of why I thought this would be really, so we, so I had, I lived out by McKinney Lake, and I'm in my direction, I'm pointing in the direction of where McKinney Lake is for, and I was living, it was right by McKinney Lake store, right across from the lake, and Liam used to come hang out. He drove this really ugly van, this terribly ugly little like caravan type of thing. Always wore his like derby hat. Very Irish boy, you know.
We're not really Irish, Scott.
I know, but like he dressed perfectly with the name. Like it was perfectly like, you know, even though you guys have the last name, and like he, of course, Liam is also very commonly an Irish name too. And so is yours. So yeah, but
Yes, well, my name literally means Ireland.
yes.
So does yours.
So anyway, but I just remember his outfits and always black. He really liked dark colors. Yep. And I will see it. If I was 21, he was probably 21 or 22 at that time. Yeah. Because I knew he was just a little bit older than me. But I don't remember how we met. I can't even remember. I was working at Country Kitchen overnight serving, and I'm pretty sure he hung out with a bunch of people that came in for coffee and smoked cigarettes all night long in that side, as we did back then.
That's what a lot of us did back then.
And so I remember hanging out with him. We would drive down to Superior when we were still living in Grand Rapids. We would drive down to Superior for Stargate because they had the dry nights. Now I don't know why we would go on the dry nights with I'm trying to think about this here. Why we would go on the dry nights when we were over 21. I
Was
can't
he
remember why,
dating?
for the life of me.
Was he Who was he dating at the time?
Jenny.
Jenny. Okay.
Yeah, and they lived with my friend Danielle in the trailer court over by the bowling alley.
How old was she at the time? Was it that
About the
she was?
same age. We were all about, she's blonde.
I know Jenny, actually.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so we were all, yeah, so let's see, we've been tw it was 2004, so it was about, I was 21, and because Liam was a little bit older than me. When was he born?
1984,
Oh,
January.
younger. So then he was younger than me. Okay, but not by much, only by like 6 months. Yeah. Okay, but still, yeah. So I knew like we were relatively the same age, and Jenny was, I think, a little bit older than me. But yeah, so I think they broke up when I'm not too long after I moved to Superior, something happened, and so he just wanted to up and leave. And so he came down to Superior and stayed with me. I want to say it was maybe a few weeks while he stayed in I mean, my apartment was full because we had a two bed. I had a two bedroom with my roommate, and we already had another person move in that was sharing my bedroom. And Liam brought a whole bunch of furniture that, like, suddenly, and then it was left at my apartment. Like,
That's so Liam. I mean,
yeah. I ended up having to get rid of a bunk bed with one of those. Remember those, like they were metal frame, and the bottom bunk was actually a futon. Do you remember
yeah.
that? Yes, that's what he had. And he left that there. And then I had this rocking chair that he brought with him. And that rocking chair went with me from place to place to place because he had never came and picked it up or anything like that. And I had it for the longest time. I can't even remember whatever happened to it after, but I had it for so
Gosh, I wish I
long.
knew where it had gone.
I know, I
Like
know.
what rocking chair it was, because it might be.
It was, no, it was, he didn't make it sound like it was anything from a, like, it just, I think he just came with it from, Grand Rapids where he was, but he didn't make it sound like there was a big attachment to it at all. Like, but I still kept on, I held on to it for so long. And I remember us meeting up. He was doing so. Okay, so let's just get into the fact that he moved to Superior, lived with me. I helped him find a place with my friend Troy.
Okay.
And
I think I know who Troy is.
Troy Hansen.
I don't know him personally, but
Okay.
we were connected after he died.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, because Troy is from here, but he lived down there. And so he happened to be needing a roommate, and we were full at our apartment. So we just kind of introduced them, and Liam moved over there. And then I don't know what happened, but somehow we lost touch. I can't remember where he ended up working, but it had to have been maybe a year later that we ran into each other, and he was working for a DJ service.
Yep, I
And
remember him.
he'd met someone, and I think they got married.
Yeah, that's Megan.
Yes, I didn't ever
They
meet
got married
her.
and they had a daughter.
Okay, I didn't know that either.
Yeah,
I never,
my daughter today.
it was one time I can't remember if it was from Facebook or MySpace. Because it was still MySpace at the time, and I was friends with him on both those. And something was being said on Facebook or MySpace, and it just looked really eerie. I didn't know, like somebody had mentioned tagged Liam in something, but and it looked confusing. So I think, and then I read, that he had died,
Yeah.
and I was like, wait, what? I was so confused. So confused because we had literally just talked. It was, I want to say, maybe 2 weeks prior to this.
Yeah.
Because we were literally talking about him coming to pick up his chair. And and then all of a sudden, I just remember seeing that. And I messaged Megan then, and I sent her a message, and I'm like, I don't, we've never met. I was, Liam and I were very close friends. And so all she sent me back was that it was true and stuff. And I think I told her about the chair too, and then that thing never came of that either. And so I can't remember what happened to that chair.
Oh, it's a chair.
It's still bugging me though, because like I really wish I knew. But when I remember how Liam and I met in Grand Rapids here, and it was really refreshing because he was such a nice person, such a kind person, and he was just like he didn't have any judgments on people. Like,
He made zero judgments on anybody else.
I have to say that because of course I was really young and still just only a few years out of the closet, and he was one of the only like guys in this town that was kind enough to not even make that an issue. He didn't even make little gay jokes around me, in fact I think he got a huh
That just wasn't how we were raised,
yeah
we
and that's what I'm
friends.
saying. So there was this kindness, but yeah, let's I want to hear your a little bit about.
We spent a large chunk of our childhood out in California. Liam was a little younger. I was 11 when we moved to Minnesota
Okay.
and didn't end up north until the early 2000s. And it's kind of funny that a lot of the things that you said about how you met him and the hat that he wore and how he always wore black, and so much of what you have said actually resonates to how sick he actually was and why he died, why he didn't do this anymore. He wore black because that's how he felt. He wore that hat to cover up dandruff because hygiene was an issue. And I mean, you talk so much about mental health and how important it is. And that's why Liam's the my reason. But he had horrible dandruff. He had gorgeous hair, but horrible dandruff because he just couldn't take care of himself. And he met and married Megan, and She got pregnant, and I think he got scared.
Got it.
He got really, really scared and knew that he couldn't even take care of himself. He had a
Yeah.
really hard time holding down a job. That's why leaving furniture was no big deal,
Sure.
because life was transient for him, and he just hurt all the time underneath it all. So he couldn't make any judgment on anybody else because he felt terrible about himself all the time.
Yeah. I do remember he was, it was, if you ever got him to smile or laugh, it was very quick and short. Like he would like, it would just be that moment and then right back into quiet. Like he was the person that hung out in the, on the sidelines while everyone else was doing their thing. And he just like was there. It's how I felt like he liked being that way. You know, I didn't know much about mental health back then either. And I was way into my own crap. You know, and that was one thing. He was always very kind in talking about, like, he didn't mind talking with other people about their stuff and helping them. Like, I think it made him feel like that was what he could do, was he could talk to other people and listen and help give advice, but he didn't know how to fix himself. I can relate.
Exactly. And I find a connection with that personally as well, that like him, kind of hung on the edge, watched everybody else because I was very unsure and struggled with myself. But have always really been able to listen to other people and help them sort through their stuff while not necessarily dealing with my own. It helps me to deal with your stuff. Then I don't even have to worry about mine because I'm busy dealing with your stuff.
Exactly. It's a deflection. It's a, if I'm helping you focus on that, I don't have to worry about my crap, you know? And I get that. And I have to say that when I look back at my memories of Liam ever since we've like the last few months that we've started talking about him, and I've been able to unlock those memories because it was, I hadn't thought of him in that way. Like I won't, I've lost so many friends to different reasons over the past decade, for sure. And more. Obviously, Liam was over a decade now, but not much. Like, he was one of the first I remember of in my early adult days of a close friend that I had a very special bond to that I lost to. You know, and it was. That was my first experience.
Talk about we I guess we haven't even mentioned, we just talk about how he died, but it was suicide. I
And
not
it's not, I know I didn't want to be the person to say it since it's
no,
like,
but
you know, but it
it's
is true and
fine. And this
it
is
is
the
an important
only way that stigma
conversation.
ends. This is the only way that stigma ends. And I'm sorry, I'm bad
You
at
thank you. Thank you.
the control.
I pride myself on being that person that wants to talk about this stuff, but as someone who unfortunately struggles with suicidal thoughts very much more than ever in my entire life these days. And I always clarify, I don't have suicidal plans. I literally just have those ideations.
My therapist gave me the phrase ideation without intent.
Yes. I mean, I can't stop those thoughts. It doesn't mean I want to do it.
Exactly. I've struggled with some of that myself, especially living as far north as we do. And with spring being around the corner, oh my gosh, I can just feel my spirits lifting.
Are you ready to go hiking?
I am so ready to go hiking. It's on. It's
I
on like
know.
donkey Kong, man.
It's gonna be so. I'm gonna have so many of you hiking buddies. We're gonna all do. I mean, I love to explore. I love going out into nature and exploring.
I want to do a group, a small group, appropriately distanced at Joyce Estates.
Okay. Nice. I like how we both have to say that appropriately distanced because. I love that. Okay, we're a year into this whole pandemic now, officially for, because I think, well, I remember this was the last day I worked at Boulder last year, right before we went in, and it was supposed to be St. Patty's Day. I had green beer and everything ready for it last year, and all of a sudden it's like, nope, we got to file for unemployment and stuff like that. And it was scary, but at the same time, I wasn't scared, but I was cautious.
I was working in education when the pandemic hit. So I got to watch a really interesting shift with
Heck.
in-person to distance learning. And I was working in Deer River, which is a very economically, there's poverty. And so there's a lot of issues with internet connections and them being able to have access. And so there were a lot of packets that went out, and paras were working pretty frequently. And it wasn't until the summer that was the wine bars not far from my house. So that was my favorite place to go hang out. And she kept, nudging me. I've known Tia for, I met Tia not too long after Liam died.
Okay.
I moved up to Grand Rapids. Liam died when I was married to my first husband, and I want to say within 6 months I was up here. It sometimes it feels like 5 minutes, and sometimes it feels like 50 years.
Yeah. I bet. I mean,
So I knew Tia, and she and I had just kind of been in touch for, over a decade. And she said, "Come work for me. Come waitress." And then as soon as it's, I said, "Yeah, sure. I'll make some extra money this summer. I'm not working because of the school." And I knew that she'd be safe as far as that kind of job goes. I knew that she'd be minding her P's and Q's and making sure that people were, we masked long before it was a mandate. And we're not mean about it. We don't even have snarky notes or anything. But I am of the attitude that we need to help each other stay safe in this, and that the only way to get through this is to get through this. And a mask sucks. I hate it. I wear them
Hey,
for
I hate wearing a mask
hours a
too.
day, but I caught myself. I had worked an 8 hour shift at the wine bar, and then I came home and I was just cleaning house for like hour and a half, 2 hours, and realized I was still wearing my stupid mask.
I've done that. I have literally been in my office at work where I don't have to wear a mask, and I'll be sitting there. I'll have sat there for at least an hour and a half wearing the mask. I mean, that's how I'm used to it, and I'm comfortable in it. But working in a restaurant, working in, at Boulder, and you like relatable, you get used to just having it on whenever, especially if you're out in public. But I just, even in the office at Boulder, like at the end of the day, I would have the mask on. It just never failed. It's so weird to think where we are now. Like another thing that always why I think back to Liam a lot is those were the days that I kind of have blocked out. Not Liam, but there's a lot I blocked out because I made some really unhealthy choices around those times, and I started to become a really terrible person. And with Liam, it was one of those people. I pushed him away because I don't know. I would sometimes he scared me.
He scared himself, quite honestly.
Yeah, and
Part
I
of it,
didn't.
I think that he saw some things happening within himself. And I didn't tell any of my family that I was doing this. I really didn't tell anybody that I was doing this.
That you were coming onto the podcast to talk about this?
And it's not that I keep quiet about it. I'm not ashamed. I think that the stigma needs to end. When I talk about what happened to him, I look at it as if there were a lot of people who were angry when he killed himself, who were really mad at him. And I don't think I was mad for more than a minute.
I mean, there's the obvious, of course you're going to be mad. Of course.
I
And you have
wasn't.
the right to be, but some it's that whole fact that at those times in the generation that raised us, Aaron, in our generation and stuff, they raised us to keep quiet about our mental health, to not talk about
Oh God, they, and I had really progressive parents. So don't get me wrong. My parents were really progressive, which is why Liam could fold comfortably into what was going on with you coming out of the closet and make you feel the way he did, because
Well,
progressive parents. But even within that progressive family, the things that happened in that family and stuff, it was all keep quiet. It was all, you know.
It was still just it's
perfection, you know.
It's the expectations of society, no matter what. You know, it's one thing to be accepting of gay people and not racist, you know, and very progressive thinking. It's another to mental health is a whole different thing in general. Like, you don't talk about it because you cannot let other people. It's a weakness. Mental health in that in their generation's eyes is a weakness, or mental illness, I should say.
Yeah. But that's exactly what it was, though. He was sick.
I believe what I can't remember, but was he diagnosed bipolar?
Yes.
Yeah. And
there's a history of that in my family. And he, this is the heartbreaking part, and the reason we need to normalize this and take the stigma away and such, because it was hard for him to have access to medication on a regular basis because he was sick. He couldn't hold down a job, which meant he couldn't keep insurance, and the state wouldn't give him insurance. I mean, I love Minnesota. They're an amazing progressive state in a ton of ways. I've always been taken care of for the last.
But at that time, wasn't he living in Wisconsin, though?
He was.
Yeah.
But.
And their health care was way worse, though.
Yeah, theirs wasn't any better. And he couldn't stay on meds consistently. And he was at the age where, you know, a similar age where you said, you know, you were making some really destructive choices. And so was he. He was making some really, really poor choices. And I think that there was a minor theft.
Okay.
There was just, life got rough for him. Life got really rough for him. And, but like I keep trying to, he was sick. And this is why I wasn't angry, because he wasn't sick anymore. It's kind of like looking at someone who has terminal cancer and you know that this is going to kill them sooner rather than later. Do you force them to just keep slogging through really painful life with chemo and radiation and stuff just to buy that time? Because yeah, I'm pissed that I didn't get time, but I'm not mad at him. Yeah. I'm mad at whatever system or whatever reality that we were in that meant he couldn't get okay. I've been fortunate enough to, partially because he did what he did, it's stayed my own hand when mental health crisis hits. It's kept me from taking ideation to intent.
Yeah.
Honestly. But he was so, so sick. And this is the part that there's a picture, because like I said, I recently got married before he died. And there's a picture that my mom's cousin shares almost every year. And he's with my cousin Michael, and he's got arms around each other, big smile on his face. It's not a smile. It's almost a grimace. There is zero joy. And that's how he felt all the time.
Yeah.
And he never could figure out how to dig his way out. And then he felt like he had this kid on the way and he couldn't do it. And at least this way, maybe the state would provide for his kid. You know, he only called my mom. He didn't think about anybody else. And he said, well, at least this way, my kid will get a social security check. You know, I could take care of my kid this way, because I know I can't take care of my kid any other way. And for someone to feel that way, and for someone to just, everything in their life is screaming at you, I am miserable. and I don't want to be here anymore. And he didn't want help either. He talked his way out of a 72-hour hold.
Wow.
The day before he died.
I will say he was really good. He was very good at talking himself out of things. I cannot disagree. He was a wordsmith, or you know what I'm saying. He was
very verbose, and
he's very convincing when he
would have made an excellent lawyer, you know.
He was very intelligent.
If things had gone a different way, Liam could have just, he was so smart. And when he was young, lit up the room. And that's where the tragedy lies, you know, is that, and he had moments where those kind of moments where someone who's already dealing with some fragile mental health issues that just shatter you. There was a bullying incident at school that was horrible and hugely public and pretty much unpunished.
I remember him sharing that with me.
And the person who did it to him, basically just no consequences. And like, that was a really huge shift for him at a very young age. That was like sixth grade. And our family dynamic and the stuff that was going on there come into play too. And I'm not necessarily comfortable to speak too much more on that, because that dealt a little more personally than necessarily I want to go right now, but it definitely speaks to why there's extra challenges when you add mental health, bipolar, or depression, you know.
Yeah, I can't imagine living in that. I mean, I live in my own hell every single day, but I explain that to people all the time. I'm literally living in my own hell. And the best thing I get to always say is that I survived another day. But there are some nights my suicidal ideations come in the place of, usually when I'm at my lowest, I just want to go to bed and not wake up. I don't want to take my life. I just hope that I don't wake up. I hope the world ends or something, you know, because that,
I know that very, very well. I'm so sad though, to hear that you feel that way so consistently.
Not many people know that, because like, there's a lot, like, you get to see my brighter side a lot of times, that persona that I share in public, because people don't, like, when you're working
between the lines on social media and stuff.
Yeah, people who are close enough to me and follow all my social media, they can tell. I'm very open and honest about my mental health, and it's because of people like Liam. It is because of several other friends of mine that I've lost to suicide. And it's, I used to be that one that was usually trying to always say, I'm continuing my life for them. And that's not true.
No.
It's not true. But I am glad that I'm one of the people that gets to be back to tell the stories. Like, we get to share, like, I shared some stuff about Liam that you'd not known yet.
Yeah, I didn't know what caused him to make the move. I was living in Big Fork with our parents at the time.
Okay.
And maybe I wasn't living with them, but I was living in my own place up in Big Fork. And he moved. I remember Jenny coming to the house, my parents' house in Big Fork. I had had my son not too long before. I had him in 2003. One of the last pictures I have of Liam is him holding my son. And it's, I need to go grab it.
Oh, sure.
And the reason I need to go grab it is because he's wearing the hat.
Oh my God. Yeah. And like, I mean, he was just, but his little grin, it was actually more telling than his smile. Because a lot of times I think that his smile when he showed his teeth was forced. Was fake. But the grin you could see was that little bit of him there, just, you know.
That little smirk.
Yeah, there was
We both kind of have that going
like
on.
sometimes he just like you'd say something to him, he didn't even respond with words, he'd just look at you with that smirk.
And he had very expressive eyebrows too.
He was
Very
a
expressive face in general.
he was a confusion to me because a lot of times I could not tell. I'm like, are you flirting with me? And he's like, maybe you'll never know. Like he would just say things like that.
Serious.
That he and I had conversations where he did not like. I feel like it's okay to share this because he didn't seem like it was a secret to himself or anyone else. But he was straight. But there were times where he was talking about how he didn't he where pe a lot of people talk about pansexual now, where you're attracted to the person. There was a lot of times he talked about how there's he didn't always consider himself 100% straight. He did date women, and obviously he married a woman. But I remember us having a conversation where I think he didn't he's one of the reasons that I believe that no one is 100% straight.
I agree. And you know, I'm of the love is love camp. Oh, Katie's calling me right now. I'm gonna hit ignore. Hang on a second. I love her and she loves me and she'll understand.
I was wondering what the buzzing was. I'm like, what is happening?
It's Katie, the beekeeper, buzzing in.
Clever, yes.
Oh gosh. I mean, this has been sad but equally wonderful. I wish that people knew the Liam that he was so hiding by the time he met you, because he was so smart and really insightful and really caring and empathetic. He took all of the painful stuff that he was going that he had going on inside of him and said, "Let me take care of everybody else because that lessens my pain." He was a Lego whiz. He built the most amazing Lego creations and he had like so many. My son has them now and that's kind of nice.
Have you heard of the musical Dear Evan Hansen?
No, I haven't.
So it won the Tony Award a couple of years ago. It was very popular. It had it's a it was very important type of musical, and it's about mental health, social anxiety, and suicide. And it's just such an important story in that case. And I it's they actually turned it not just hold. I'm gonna grab something. Not only is it a Broadway musical, with the music written by the same people who wrote the music for The Greatest Showman, by the way. Yes, but they made it into a book.
Oh, I would love to borrow that.
I'm gonna let you borrow it. Yes, are you at the wine bar tomorrow?
I am.
All right, I'll bring it to you. I think you'll really like the story. It might be a little bit tender on the emotions, but it might help you. Maybe there might be some perspectives in there that might help you even understand Liam a little bit more.
It's interesting because I think. I don't think my older brother ever dealt with it. Not
Okay.
me. My dad is one of the only other people I know that can talk about him with ease. My mom's gotten better over the years. It's funny because after Liam died, there was a sort of deference that went towards her because this was her baby. This was her youngest child at that, who had died. And it wasn't until a few years ago when my Aunt Kim, my mom's sister, died, that she was able to realize that. And I had actually been deferential towards her about grief. You know, I would kind of every year around his birthday and the anniversary of his death, I would kind of stuff all of the sad stuff in and try to have the comforting, let me take care of you, just like Liam, call with my mom and say, thinking about you today, I love you, you know, being that support to her. I want to say it's even within like the last year. One of our phone calls, I think maybe it was even in January when I called her for his birthday, and she said, you know, it's just as bad for you as it is for me. Your grief is just as bad. Because I mentioned something about, you know, her grief being larger than mine. This was her baby. And she said, no. She said, you know, having lost my sister now, I realize that it's the same. It's just as huge.
I'm the middle child too. So I'm not very close with my older brother. I'm somewhat close with my younger brother. We were very close to close together in age, or we are very close together in age. And so we were very close as we grew up. But after high school and stuff, and we went our separate ways and stuff like that, it was a little, it's we're not close, but most updates come from my mother.
My older brother and I are fairly close in age. We are 1 year, 1 month, and 1 day apart in age. And Liam and I were 4 years apart in age. So I almost did a little bit of caretaking, both being the middle child and a girl, and you know, just old enough to help take care of him a little bit. My train of thought is kind of trying to circle back around
That's okay.
to grief, and I don't want to say I'm over it because there are times where it will smack me in the face. And there's a article floating around, and if you Google grief is a ball in a box, you'll find this article that some woman wrote. And she described grief as a box with a ball in it. And there's a button on the inside of this box. And there's a ball bouncing around. And the ball and the button, the ball never changes size, but the button changes size. And you never know when it's going to hit that button. You never know when that grief is just going to smack you or how big that grief is going to be. It can be something really small. And I just break. But
I think that's okay. I don't think you're ever, you only can, you grieve how you grieve. And if that's years of grief, it's unfortunate, but
it's not. It that's just it, is that it's I think early on I had so much acceptance because I think I'm one of the few people that really realized how he felt. I felt so much the way he did that I was like, I fucking get it, man. Because that's like you were talking before about how you just, on your hard days, you just want to crawl into bed and kind of hope that tomorrow just doesn't come. Get that. That's probably the biggest symptom of my depression, is that just kind of wanting to crawl in my bed but not being able to sleep at the same damn time. I, having been raised by progressive parents, and I've had several really strong, empathetic family members who have really enfolded me. My grandmother was one. I lost her just over a year ago, and that was obviously just as painful as Liam passing away, what, 12 years ago or so, 13, something like that. Just because she was such a touchstone for me. You know, she was one of those people who held me up when nobody else could, when I just couldn't do another minute. I could call her and didn't even have to necessarily tell her what was going on, just hear her voice. And I don't have access to Liam's voice. I wish somehow I did for the longest time his voicemail was still there, and I didn't think to record it, and I'm really glad that I didn't, because I have a handful of voicemails from my grandmother that I need to record them before they're no longer either.
Did you call Liam's voicemail a lot just to hear his voice?
I
Yeah.
did for 2 years, and you know, then it stopped working, and my mom says that she can feel him quite frequently, and she said that she finds dimes all the time. And I talked to Megan, and she had this super poignant moment where she felt very, very close to him not too long ago. And I've talked to other people who have had that, and I really haven't had a lot of that. And that makes me sad, honestly. That makes me more sad than him dying. That just whole feeling of like, well, he's just gone then, damn it. That's it.
I mean, I hear that. I hear what you're saying. I guess, and that's why I'm glad that we connected through that, through him and his, our memories of him. And because we didn't know each other, you or I, when I knew him, I can't even remember, like, I don't honestly remember him talking about his family a lot of times with me. I didn't know much about his family life. I mean, not too much.
He felt really disconnected from his family. I think that because he and I were quite close, and we actually got the older we got. But I think he saw everybody else figuring out their life. Well, I mean, in hindsight, I had married an absolute monster of a human being, and I was not doing any better in my life than in a lot of ways than he was. I was going from job to job to job every year or two. I want to say I moved pretty much on an annual basis, sometimes more than once a year for 20 years, you know? And but he saw everybody else moving along with life. And he tried to. He met a girl, he got married, and it wasn't a magic wand.
It wasn't a magical fix-all. Like, we all believe when we see other people succeeding in life, we see people, or we get to see that perception, especially now with social media being as prominent as it is. I
I'm
that mo
guilty of it. Guilty, 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 guilty.
but those moments of seeing other people having going on vacations and having fun and getting new jobs, buying homes, getting married. For me, it always leaves me so empty, and all the time. I feel like I'm not meant to have that. I'm not meant to have, because it's hard for me to meet people. I don't trust. I mean, I make the joke to people that I'm a gay man. I'm a gay person is a better way to say it, because I don't limit myself to being a man. But I don't fit into my family. I don't relate to any. I mean, blood is the only thing that connects me to my family. There's nothing I have in common. I mean, my older brother and I, we see each other at Walmart, and it's saying hi like we're strangers.
And I haven't spoken to my brother in over a year.
Yeah. Were him and were he and Liam close?
They were not. And there are some deeper, darker family dynamics at play here that
Okay.
can create the divides and some of, like I said, the reasons why it wasn't just the bipolar. There were
Sure. There were factors that we don't need
factors
to bring up, yeah.
that added to this, and those factors helped create a rift between
Your brothers.
Liam and himself and me. And I've tried to repair that rift, but it's really hard to repair a rift with someone who looks at your life and just doesn't get you at all as a human, and they make a lot of judgments, and they don't know anything. And I don't I love any family that I don't still have contact with. Of course, I love them.
Yeah.
But I learned about a decade ago, my ex-husband, my second husband, because see, this is why I when I think back and I get so sad about Liam, it's mostly because I'm like, man, I haven't done any better. I've been married and divorced twice. I have massive trust issues too, and you know some about recent events that haven't helped that at all. You know, I get where you're at, where it's like, maybe it's just not meant for me.
Well,
I went to Florida twice this winter, and I haven't made it anywhere. I haven't done anything. And what?
I would always make the joke that like I men, boys, guys, everything growing up. I mean, I was raised by a toxic masculine stepfather, abandoned by an deadbeat father, abused by an older brother. Beat up by guys in school. And so I found it to be a pretty, it was one of those moments where I started to real like I lost my faith in my Christian faith.
Oh yeah,
Because I
that's
was such,
so
I was.
much of why I ended up an atheist.
Yeah.
And it wasn't through lack of knowledge. My dad made sure that like I like to say his favorite phrase is do your homework. And I tried out at some different religions and I studied them and I read about them and I thought about it and I applied it to myself and to others and I just my logical brain can't get there. I can't look at what other people profess religion to be and say that if that's true, why did this and this happen? Why has not why hasn't the good karma kicked in at this point?
Well, one of my big things that I lost my faith was I made the joke that I used to pray to God to not make me gay, to not let me be gay, because I knew I was, but I'm like, take it away. Don't do this to me, because it made me that much different. And what was even worse was why in the hell did he make me attracted to the gender of my oppressor? So it's hard for me to trust and date any man. So it's, I'm getting better about it, but now it's in a world of like online dating, and it
Oh, online dating's a nightmare.
is
I've had
because
some wonderful examples of men. My dad had his faults, and there's its own set of stuff. He and I have also had lots of very real conversations about that stuff and processed my childhood appropriately. Not everybody does that. Not everybody has the chance to do that. Not everybody is lucky to have both parties willing to sit down and have that hard conversation and say, you know, this is what happened. And but I was able to get a lot of answers that are why I can move on from Liam dying, and why I can keep trying despite having been through a lot of nonsense and continuing to go through a lot of nonsense and continuing to feel like I'm gonna break these bootstraps if I have to keep yanking them up. But I still have worked so hard, especially since my last divorce, to find joy in my life. And I used to be a lot more political and vocal and watch the news, and I don't much anymore. I believe in that. It's not like I'm not. I do my homework, and if I see something, I don't make assumptions or anything like that. But I don't watch regular
You don't
news.
need the overly dramatized version of the story that you already have dramatic. Yeah, I get it.
I fact check a lot of stuff I see on social media.
You have to these days.
So small. I had to be able to function in my world and to be okay in my world, I actually had to make it really small.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I was too busy worrying about Sudanese children starving and what was going on in my own house and my broke friend and my other friend whose husband was abusing her and all of the world, basically. So if I don't pay attention to it, it's not there and I don't have to worry about it. And I feel out of touch a lot.
Sure.
Like, I don't know what's going on because I have to live in a little bit in a bubble to function.
Yeah. But what is something that you do to help your like coping skills through your mental health? Like what's something daily that you can do to keep yourself positive?
I try to recognize those small moments of joy. Because honestly, it's those small moments of joy that make the whole big picture up. If I look at the my children's lifetimes this far and the memories with them, it's not the big things, it's the little things. And with
Yeah.
Liam, it's not a lot of big memories, it's little things. And actually, my memory is crap. My coping mechanism from the shit show that was my childhood was to have PTSD brain. And I don't remember anything. I have to write myself notes. I will not remember all the conversations we had. My memory skills are terrible.
Mine
Terrible.
too. Mine as well.
My brain just shut it out and it never quit doing that. So I still have to reach for memories, and it's again, that's part of the tragedy with Liam being gone is that I don't have those I don't have a lot of those memories anymore. They're gone.
Well, and those memories just seem further and further away as we age. And that's the part, I think that's the part of loss that makes it hard for me is I don't make friends easily. And when I do make friends, sometimes I take that friendship for granted and I don't realize how important that friendship is to me. Like there are times where it's like, could have I been a better friend to Liam? You know, could have I changed that outcome? But you can't get into those shoulda, coulda, wouldas, you know? I
No,
know.
because there were plenty of people who were trying to be involved. I had gone in and tried to be involved in his life more than once. He had actually moved in with me for a brief time. I think he and Megan were together and they broke up or something, or I don't know what was going on, but he ended up moving way back down to Marshall, where I was living. And I ended up giving him furniture that I'm sure somebody else had to get rid of at some point. But I ended up having to kick him out
Yeah.
because he wasn't bathing, and I—that was twice in my life that I had let him move in with me, and I had to be like, "I'm sorry, you have to go." When he first moved out of the house, he moved in with me. I was living in an apartment in Marshall, and you could smell the smell of his socks in the hallway of the building, not just the hallway of the apartment, the hallway of the building, and he would just sleep through the alarm for hours. And oh, he came to Thanksgiving dinner once wearing a three-piece suit, but the body odor was so bad. You couldn't sit next to him. And if that doesn't scream, I'm sick, I don't know what does. You know, that was someone who was really trying hard to put on a front. And I think what made him so quiet in the end, and I think maybe you, and I know that this is part of it for me and maybe for you too, was for a long time he tried to be a little bit of a chameleon. He was
He tried
very
to adapt to different places.
yes, he was very
Well,
good
that's
at being able to
Yes.
say what you needed to hear.
Well, and that's why I think he shared the sexuality thing with me, because when he moved there, when we both like I moved there to be able to be around more gay culture, and he hung out with me in that gay culture. So I think sometimes he was feeling like he wasn't gay, but like there was the vibe that he was feeling that he was feeling a part of something.
He wanted to fit in somewhere,
Yes.
anywhere. Please, God, let me fit in. And I don't want to, I don't like to use the word liar because that has such negative connotations. But he was a little bit pathological because of
Sure.
that desire to fit in.
I yeah.
Turning on these different personalities. And then he hit this point where he's like, I think he didn't know who he was. And I think he had hit a dark corner, and some bad stuff started to happen that even I don't know all about. And some of the stuff I've heard has made me really sad. And I can understand my kind, loving, wonderful soul of a brother looking at himself and saying, I can't do this anymore. I honestly think that he was afraid of who he was becoming because his illness had just taken over.
It's all the, I'm so glad that you shared, and you were very upfront and expressive about how important it is to have these conversations to end the stigma on suicide and to talk, like share, like, and you know, and if you see somebody that is, you know, struggling, you know, just reach out with that, you know, to let them know that they're seen, you know, because there's so many more people out there, like
You
there's
really
so
have
many.
to, because I, for instance, I'm not actually someone who's going to put out that cry for help very loudly or very often. I'm really not. In fact, I'm one of the kind of people who you actually better check on me if you don't hear from me. If all of a sudden you've gone completely radio silent, someone should probably message me or give me a call or something.
I think I would be the same way, because people, like, clearly, I think I would be noticed. It would be noticed if I was gone. I mean, I'm not tooting my own horn, but I'm clearly a large personality. People know I leave an impression. And so I know that I'm not naive to that. In a way, I love that. That's one of my things that I do. And I usually try to make sure it's a positive impression. So that's why if I was to go to that point and people did not see me on social media or hear from me for days, there's clearly something wrong.
Yeah.
So and that's the thing is, like with Liam, he and I could lose touch for months at a time and reconnect randomly, and a whole new, I mean, within 3 months, he had a whole 5 year experience, it
Yep.
seemed. His life was moving
Yeah.
so fast.
His life did move fast, and he was everywhere and everywhere and nowhere at the
Yep.
You know, but he was a magical soul, and like he invented a drink, and I wish I remembered how to make it. If I could find the bartender that worked at the Timberwolf when I worked there eons ago, he made something called a flaming Dr. Pepper. He invented a drink, and it was really
Yeah.
freaking tasty, and I don't remember what was in it, and he could draw really, really, really.
Yes, he could. He used to leave notes in my friend Becky's purse, with little drawings on them. He had a little crush on my friend Becky. And it doesn't surprise me, because Becky was also going through her own mental health stuff, and she had hers. I mean, most of us who struggle, we get drawn to each other.
Gravitate, and you gravitate for sure.
And we're in each other's lives. And there's a song. Have you heard, you've so we talked about Dear Evan Hansen. Do you know the musical Wicked?
Yes.
Have you listened to the music?
Yes.
Okay, so I want you to listen to the final song. It is called For Good. It's called For Good. And it's a great message about friendship. And it's like how sometimes people only come into your life for just a moment, but it's very important for you to understand how important that moment was for your life. And think about what, I mean, because no matter what, Liam changed my life in different ways. And who know, I mean, am I a better person for knowing him? I like to think so. And am I a better person because I have the memories of him? I only have a couple of years of memories of him, but they were very, like, he was a very special human being. And in my journey. And I really wish that I could remember him better than I do. But I can't deny, like you said, like all these things happen in weird times and people feel him in their presence. And just a few days before I saw the post that I clicked you two related together, I was thinking of him quite often. Like it just kind of was in my mind. And it just like so that it was like the whole Facebook thing. When you talk about something, it just shows up on Facebook. And
Yeah.
that happened. Somebody shared that picture, commented on a picture of Liam on something. I think you might have shared. I can't remember, but I saw it and I was just like, I messaged Katie. I messaged Katie. I'm like, hey, question, do you know if like blah blah blah, this is are they related and stuff? And she's like, yeah, I think that's his brother or her brother. And I was like, oh my God. And so that's when I reached out to you because it was a sign that I think we were supposed to connect.
Yeah, I usually change my profile picture. One of my favorite photos, and I think the timing. And I, Liam shared a lot with me, but I know that there was three times as much that he did not share with me. And there was a shift. And I have the photo I think that I changed was one of all three of us siblings together at my older brother's wedding.
Yep, that's the one that.
And that's a genuine smile on his face in that picture. And so there was a shift in that space of time, in that couple of years, where something got real dark for him somehow. And I don't know what that was all about. I went and dug his apartment out more than once, moldy dishes, dog crap from one end to one the other. But always surrounded by people who saw him as their support. Everywhere he went, he had friends who were like, he's the nicest guy I've ever met, and he's always there for me. And
He would drop anything to go and help a friend. I know that.
in a heartbeat, in a heartbeat, he dropped anything. Oh, Emma's bringing me the picture.
Oh, cool.
Actually, this, no, that's not the picture I'm thinking of.
Well, I was gonna say maybe if you can also send me some pictures that I can put on with this episode. I think unfortunately we have to start wrapping it up, but I know we could talk about Liam forever, but I really want to ha thank you so much for sharing those stories and thanking you for being so making that important conversation happening. I do want to remind all my followers and listeners, about the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline and Hotline. If anytime you're thinking of or concerned, anytime, you can call a very anonymous and confidential line. It is 1-800-273-8255. All right. And thank you again, Aaron, for joining tonight and sharing stories about Liam. It was so special to have you.
You're welcome, and thanks so much for having me. I don't often get the opportunity to open the dialogue and share why it matters so much to me and why I know it's so important.
Well, excellent. Thank you again.